Okay, today is Daf Tet. We're going to start at Chet Amabet at Amar Rava. Okay, there's a little vav by it in mine. I don't know, sometimes it's not always the same in each one. There's a little symbol by it. That's what we're up to? Yeah. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Amar Rava. Reuven shemachar kos dotan l'shimon. V'halach Shimon u'machar sadeh echad l'levi. Okay, so Reuven, let's assume, okay, I put it on the sheet like this. Reuven has Zibori, Benonid, and Idid. He sells them all to Shimon. Then, from there, Shimon sells a field to Levi. Okay, at this point, we don't know what kind of field, but you can already see from my sheet that eventually they're going to say, not eventually, but it's very soon, they're going to say, it's only if we're talking about that he sold him a Benonid. So, the first guy who owes money sells to a second guy. The second guy sells to a third guy, but he doesn't sell all his fields. He sells only one. Uba Balchov de Reuven. Comes the Balchov of Reuven. What are his options? Ratzad mizegove, ratzad mizegove, right? He goes to Reuven. Reuven has no land. So, and he has no money. So he can't collect from Reuven. So what does he say? He says, well, Shimon's got property he bought from Reuven, and Levi's got property that he bought from Shimon who bought from Reuven. So I have my choice. I can go take his, and I can go take his. Again, it could be a matter of, you know, which is closer to his house or which
he
prefers.
Why isn't he limited in that case to the one that matches the level, the quality level?
So that's what they're going to say. That's why I said eventually we're going to say that clearly it's only referring to if Shimon sold Levi a Beinonit, in which case you'd have to say that Shimon also has Beinonit. In other words, he didn't sell all the Beinonit. Right, exactly. V'lo maran ela de zaban benonit. Okay, so now here comes the Gemara, and they say, when Rava said this, it's only in the case where he sold him benoni. Aval zaban idit v'ziburit lo. But if he sold him the idit in the ziburit land, then this wouldn't be the case. Why? De amarle. Now here we're going to get into a bunch of these amarles. In other words, amarle means he could claim. Okay, so Levi could claim lahachi daike v'zabne idit v'ziburit. What is he? What can he say?
That's
he says exactly, precisely that's the reason why I bought the Edith and the Ziburit off this guy, because I knew there was a loan out, and I didn't want to get property that was owed to somebody else. So I specifically took the other property, and that's why he can't necessarily, right, if he didn't sell Levi the Benoni, then Levi can claim, you can't collect from me. So number one, now we say, so when Rava said that you can collect from either one you want, it's only in the case where he actually has Beinoni land. And now we say another caveat. Beinoni nami lo amrinan, ela delotier Beinoni kavate. Right, this is exactly what you said before, Ruth, that as long as, right, Beinoni lo amrinan, ela delotier Beinoni de kavate. It's only in a case where he doesn't leave Beinoni like that. Maybe I misunderstood them when you asked that question. Sounds like aval shiir benoni de kavate gabe shimon lo gabe mine de matze amrle he nachta l'chamakom l'gvot mimenu. So maybe it is.
That only applies when they both have benoni. It's what you said.
No, it's the opposite. It's dafka saying the opposite. So maybe I was wrong. Maybe he really did sell all the benoni land. And then, so just give me 1 second to check. Because in this case, okay, I'll just hold off 1 minute so I don't explain something wrong. 1 second.
They say one and then they say the other.
I'm trying for a little while. And I guess it must be. So now they're saying, Dafka, against what I said, which is it's only if Shimon has no Benoni land left. But if Shimon were to have Benoni land left, then you'd be able to say, look, when I bought this land from Shimon, I knew he had other land. And therefore, I knew you'd collect from him. So, 1 second. Deloshir Benoni Kavate. So then you'd have to say, different from what I said in the beginning, that if Reuven sold his land to Shimon and Shimon sold all his Beinoni land, then the Baal Chov can either collect from Shimon or collect from Levi. So the question is, how can he collect from Shimon? What would he collect from him? How could that be? Because, right? second. Here, okay, so now the note here says that from Shimon he could collect, why? From the Zibarit. Even though, right, so he could say, since you bought all of Reuven's fields, you're the person that I can take from it. Okay, so I misunderstood. So let's go back. So if Reuven sells Zibarit, Beinonit, and Idit, and Shimon sells the Beinonit to Levi, so Levi can, if Shimon still has Beinoni land, then Levi could say, listen, I'm the last guy. I left you stuff to collect from Shimon, and you can't collect from me, right? This is all assuming that the Beinoni land he left was the same value as, right, was enough to cover the loan. And so Levi can say, well, I bought it knowing that you collect from Shimon. The assumption is Shimon's the first in line, basically, since he bought directly from Reuven. But if he sold his Beinoni land, then we're going to say they become equal. Equal in the sense that Shimon's Zibarit can be collected from because he's the guy number one. So his Zibarit kind of, even though he doesn't have the exact land that was leaned, he does still have land that was leaned and he was the first guy. So it goes to him. Or equally, you could take from the Beinoni of Levi. Okay, sorry that I didn't explain that right.
Levi basically said, I bought the most, the Edi and the Zibarit and left you the Beinoni.
In the case where he left the Beinoni, then for sure Shimon's in charge. But if he bought the Beinoni, which had a lien on it, he could still, in other words, even though he bought the property that has a lien on it, yes, the guy could collect from him, but he could equally collect from Shimon's Zibarit. Because he could say, well, you're the first Baal Chov, basically, you know, you're the first guy who bought the property off of Reuven. So even though it's Zibarit, obviously if the guy has a choice, you think, oh, well, he's obviously going to collect the Beinoni, but maybe the Zibarit land is right next to his property, or maybe the Beinoni land is far away and he doesn't really want that land.
But it says that the
so he gets his choice.
But it says that the rabbi sympathizes with Levi here.
They do, right, and that's why they're allowing you to be gover from Shimon.
Yes, okay.
Even
okay.
from the Zibarit. Because in theory, you would say, why would you collect from Shimon from the Zibarit? Yeah. You know, Baal Chov collects from Beinoni. Mm-hmm. But they're saying, since Levi's the second guy who bought, so he already, right, he gets sympathized with. Okay. Amar Abaye. Reuven shemachar sadeh l'shimon ba'achrayut. Okay, let's talk for a minute about achrayut. What is achrayut? Now, we've talked about this a bunch of times. Reuven has a loan out. He sells property to Shimon. Shimon knows, or he's supposed to check into it, and find out that there's a lien on this property. So he knows that going into it. There's two ways he can go now. He can buy this property. Now, this is all about property value, right? He could buy the property knowing that it might get taken away from him, but he can buy it with achrayut, which means that he buys it with a guarantee that if the Baal Chov comes and collects from this specific property, then Reuven will have to compensate him financially for his loss. Okay? Yes, we definitely learned it. We definitely learned it. Now, not only can he do this, but there's even a concept that comes up. It's called achrayut, a responsibility, but he buys it with a guarantee. But not only can he buy it with a guarantee, but we claim that achrayuto sofrini. What does that mean? It means that if you wrote a shtar and you didn't write achrayut in the shtar, then we can assume that there's achrayut. Even if, in other words, the base assumption is a guy sells his land with that was leaned, it automatically comes with achrayut, even if you didn't write it in the shtar. So there's a base assumption that you're buying land with achrayut. So as we always talk about, they could steal the property, but in the end, you can go claim in court, and Shimon can say, hey, Reuven, give me back the money for this land, okay, even if it wasn't written in the shtar. That's achrayut. Now, you could, in theory, specify that I'm selling you this land without achrayut. Now, why would you do that? Right, I'm thinking I had a case recently where we bought plane tickets from one place to another, and then another to another, okay, like two different. Now, we got a very cheap fare, and the travel agent said to us, but I want you to know that you're getting this cheap fare, but I'm not linking them. So you're taking a risk in this cheap fare by not linking them.
Because if you miss one.
If you miss one, right, then, okay, anyway, we get to the place, and then while we're there, we realize that the first flight, the time had changed, and we could no longer make our second flight. And we had to change, you know, and then, of course, you know, it was our responsibility because we didn't link the flights. And the travel agent said, well, I told you if you don't link the flight. So in other words, I wanted a bargain, so we got a bargain, but in the end, we didn't have achrayut on it. So we had to pay the difference. So now it's the same thing here. You can buy the land without achrayut, so you would say, why would you do that? You'll do it because you'll get it for a cheap price and you'll hope for the best, right? You'll hope that the flight won't get canceled, that the guy won't actually come to collect from this land. So that's not with achrayut. So let's see what happens here. So Abaye says, if Reuven sells the field to Shimon with achrayut, va'ata ba'achov de Reuven betarf mi Shimon, okay, so he sells it with achrayut. The ba'achov of Reuven comes, takes it from Shimon. Dinahu da'azo Reuven umishtai dina behadei. Let's say Reuven thinks that he actually paid the money back. Okay, so now what happens here? Reuven's Baal Chov comes and demands the money from Shimon. Now Shimon has no clue whether Reuven paid back this loan or not. Okay, presumably if he had proof of it, he'd bring his proof. Now, in theory, right now, the deal is between the Baal Chov and Shimon. Right? But Reuven can come in and say, hey, I paid back this loan already. Okay? V'lo matzei amrelei, and the Baal Chov can't come and say, la baal dvarim didiat, you have nothing to do with me. What are you coming and barging in here? This is between me and Shimon. I'm dealing with Shimon now. What are you coming? Why is he baal dvarim? Da amrelei, Reuven can say, imat kamine, alai hadar. In other words, if you take it from Shimon's hand, it's going to go back to me. In other words, I am a baal dvarim. It's true, it's between you and Shimon, but what happens to Shimon is going to affect me because I have achrayut and I have to pay Shimon back. So Reuven is allowed to come along and say, and try to prove, you know, obviously he's going to have to prove it, but say, I already paid you back the loan, what are you doing coming for the land?
So if there's no achrayut, he has no place to say it?
Yafeh. So now, the assumption of this line is that if he doesn't have achrayut, then he can't come along and say anything because this has nothing to do with him. Okay? And then Shimon is kind of a little bit stuck in that case. But now we're going to say, Ika da'amri, there was another way that people said it, which is afilu sheloba achrayut nami. Then the other way of saying is, no, even if there was achrayut, even if there wasn't achrayut, he still could say it. Now why is this? We keep going back to issues that come up in the Bava Metzia share. So what's he saying here? He can still say it because even though Reuven has nothing to do with this financially, Shimon can go and complain to him and say, hey, I thought you told me you paid back that loan, or I thought, you know, like, what are you doing? You've sold me this land and now I'm stuck. So because of this tar'omet, okay, which we'll see a lot in the Sefer Bava Metzia when we get there about what's the meaning of a tar'omet, but it's not a financial claim, but it's a complaint, it's a legitimate complaint. So because of that, that's enough of him being involved that he could still say, and the Baal Chov can't say to him, oh, you have nothing to do with this. Okay. So in other words, there's a machloket about whether you have to have actually a financial stake in it, or even without a financial stake, if you have an emotional stake, you could say, or you don't want to get into a fight with somebody, so therefore you can still be involved. V'amar Abaye, another thing Abaye says. Reuven shemachar sadeh l'Shimon shelo ba'achrayut. Okay, again he sells them shelo ba'achrayut. So again, he gets this good price, but it comes with no guarantee. Now, before he actually pays the money, okay, so they sold the field, they have a shtar, but he didn't pay the money yet. V'yatzu alav asikin. Okay, what are asikin? Asikin are people who come and claim, this land doesn't belong to Reuven, it belongs to me. Okay, now there's a debate about how much proof they need to allow this halacha to go into place. Anyone could just randomly say, oh, that land's mine. But if they're just making a random statement, then it really has no mashmaut. And most of the Mefarshim say there has to be some sort of somewhat proof. Obviously not perfect proof, otherwise it wouldn't be debatable, but some sort of debatable proof. So some people come along and claim this land isn't Reuven's. If Shimon hasn't had a chazaka on the land, we're going to see in a minute what it means to have a chazaka on the land. In other words, he has a shtar, but he hasn't paid the money yet, and he wasn't machzik the land yet. Then he can be chozerbo. He can say, listen, we made this deal, but I don't want to pay you because maybe this land really isn't yours, and I don't want to get into a problem. I'm going to have to get my money back. But once he already does a chazaka on the land, ein yachol lachzor bo. He can't go back. Why? In other words, meaning that Reuven can be mechayev him, even though there's all these people claiming this land doesn't belong to Reuven, based on the shtar and the fact that he had a chazaka on the land, Reuven can say, you must pay me my money. Okay? My time, Da amarle, chayata dekatre, savar v'kabil. You agreed, savar v'kabil means you agreed to accept a tied bag. What's a tied bag? It means you don't know what's inside. It's you agreed to accept this shtar without achrayut. So it's your problem, in other words, not my problem. So basically, okay, now obviously, we'll see in a minute, but once it's proven that these people, that it really doesn't belong to Reuven, but it belongs to Levi, let's say, then obviously Shimon can get his money back. The point is now in this interim period before it's proven, is it definitely Reuven's or is it definitely Levi's? At that point, it belongs to Shimon, and Shimon has to pay the money. And as he can't say, I'm going to wait till the court case, I'm going to wait till it's all decided, and then I'll pay you my money if it's proven. As Reuven could say, give me the money now, and you know, you'll deal with what happens later down the road. Me'emat havi chazaka. So what does it mean to have a chazaka? Mechidayish ametre, when he puts up a fence around the borders. Okay, that shows he's designating this as his land. V'davka shelo ba'achrayut. Okay, and this is only if he bought it without the achrayut. Aval ba'achrayut lo. But the assumption of the Gemara right now is that if he buys it with achrayut, well then he can wait. And he doesn't have to pay his money right away, even if he was machzikbo. Okay, but now we're going to see there's a difference of opinion. Ika da'amre afilu ba'achrayut nami. Even ba'achrayut, Reuven could still say, give me the money now. Da'amre Achve tirpecha v'ashalem lecha. Achve is show me, and tirpecha is the fact that they took the land away. In other words, show me the deed that says it belongs to them, and when you prove it to me that it belongs to them, then I'm happy to give you your money back. But right now, I'm deserving of my money, whether it's achrayut or whether it's not. So there's a machloket about whether the achrayut helps you for this issue, or maybe the achrayut doesn't help you at all. And as soon as you're machzik in the land, you have to pay the money, whether or not there's orerin that claim that this isn't his land. Wait till it's all proven, and then you can get your money. And then, once it's proven that it's not Reuven's land, for sure you'll get your money back, but only if it's proven. Because what is Reuven basically, what's he going to say? He's going to say, we made a deal, just because there's these crazy people that are lying about my property, that shouldn't penalize me, right? That's what Reuven thinks, or at least he's claiming. We don't really know whether these people are crazy or not. But just because somebody forges documents and tries to claim that this land is theirs, I shouldn't lose out. Okay? Okay, Rav Huna, now we're moving on to a new thing. If you remember, we were talking about this Metav Kesef, right? The best of your land you have to pay, and there was a whole debate about whether we mean it really has to be land that you pay, or does it have to be Kesef or land? So comes Rav Huna and he says, O Kesef, O Metav. In other words, these are two equal options. You can either pay money, or you can pay the best of your land for damages. Etive Rav Nachman leRav Huna. Rav Nachman now questions Rav Huna. Yashiv, remember we saw this source before, from the word kesef yashiv leba'alav, what did they say? Lirabot shvei kesef afilu subin. Right? Remember that included, even if you want to pay back in brand. So what do you see? It's not just kesef or metav, it could be anything. Even something that's worth money, but not actually money itself, or land. So what are the answer? No, you could say like this, hacha b'mayaskinam b'deleitle. It could be, we're talking about if you don't have land or you don't have money. And what would be the point, right? If you don't have anything, well then pshita, obviously. If you don't have money and you don't have land, then obviously you're going to pay a metaltalin. No, it's not so obvious. Why? Ma'u detema amrinan le zil trach zabin va'ayte le kesef ka mashmalan. Maybe you would have to actually, in theory, you're supposed to pay the guy money. So you can pay him something the value of money, he'll sell it. So maybe you would have thought that you have to sell it yourself and then pay him the money. No, you don't have to. You can actually just pay him the metaltalin. Okay, so that was Rav Huna. We asked a question. We answered it up. Now comes Rav Asi. I'm Rav Asi. Ksafim harehen kikarka, which sounds like the exact same thing, right? Ksafim are like land. So now the Gemara is going to say, Lamai hilchata. What's your point, Rav Asi? If you meant that you can pay metav by paying kesef also, well, that's exactly what Rav Huna said. In which case, what should he have said? V'chein amar Rav Huna, right? Or v'chein amar Rav Asi to what Rav Huna said. In other words, here it sounds like Rav Asi is making a statement not connected to Rav Huna. He should have connected his statement with Rav Huna, or the Gemara should have brought it in as v'chein amar Rav Asi. So the fact that they bring it in differently makes the Gemara question and say, well, it must be he's talking about something else. So if it's Meitav, that's Rav Huna, it doesn't make any sense the way they're bringing it here. Ella, remember that, because in the end that's what they're going to conclude, and they're going to say, really read this as V'chein Amar Rav Asi, okay? But until we get there, we're going to try some other options. Ella, L'shnei Achim Shachalku, okay, if you look here, by the way, we're going to see, this is what we're up to on the sheet, in the middle of the sheet, and we have the Ilema, that doesn't work, then we're going to try Shnei Achim, and then we're going to have a different way of reading the Shnei Achim case. Okay, and all three of those are going to be rejected, and then we're going to have an answer, we're going to reject the answer, and then we're going to go back to our original answer and explain that it's V'chein Amar Rav Asi. So that's the structure. So now, Ella l'shnei achim shachaku, let's say two brothers, and now we're going to suggest that what Rav Asi said, when he said this line, safim harehin kekarka, it had absolutely nothing to do with damages. It had to do with a totally different case, and we brought it here for no good reason. Okay? And as we thought it had to do with this, but it turned out it had to do with something else. Again, we're not going to conclude this, but that's what they're going to suggest. Let's say two brothers split up their Yerusha. Okay? Now, the Yerusha is made up of land and money. So, one takes the land, one takes the money. Okay? Let's read it inside. Sorry, I lost my place. Okay. L'shnei achim shachaku, b'natal achag karka ve'achag safim. Uba Balchov, the Balchov comes along, he's owed money from the father, and what does he take? Natal Karka. Okay, he takes land. Because remember, we talk about the land is lien, right? So the land he can take. So now, what happens? The guy, the brother who took Karka lost all the money. And the one who took money has all his property. So obviously, what's going to happen? The brother who got the Karka is going to come and claim, well, give me half the money. So now this guy goes, the one who took the karka, this brother, he takes half of the money of the other brother. So if you want to say that, pshita, hi bra, v'hai love bra, what, this is a son and this is not a son? In other words, that's obvious. Rav Asi didn't need to teach us that halacha. Obviously he's going to take it from him. Now, okay, that's one way of reading it, in which case it's pshita that that's the case, right? And therefore Rav Asi wouldn't need to teach us this. Now they're going to suggest a third possibility, but Dafka say it's not going to work, not because it's, and it's going to be the same case, but they're going to conclude the exact opposite and say not only, right, this case said, why Rav Asi need to teach it is Pshita. Now they're going to say the opposite. Why Rav Asi teach us on this case? It's not true. Okay? Now we're going to learn that maybe you could claim that one brother can't take the money away from the other one. Why? And this goes back to kind of what we started with earlier today about the achrayut and about the, you know, buying two tickets not linked and that you kind of take a risk in whatever you do. Ika de amrei adraba. Some people say, no, the halach and the shnei achim is the exact opposite. Le'idach gisa. It goes the other way. De amrei le lahachi shakle ksafim. I took money, okay, this is what the brother can claim. The one who took the money says, you can't take half my money because I took money with a risk involved. What was the risk involved in the money? D'i mignive lo mishtalem naminach. Ulahachi shakalt ara. D'i mitarfa lo mishtal malach. What is he saying? I took money. Now, I took a risk in taking money because if this money gets stolen, I've got nothing. And you took a risk in taking land. And your risk was that if the Baal Chov came, he was going to take your land. And we each knew the risk going in. And we each one of us wanted what we wanted because we were willing to take the risks involved, but we preferred not to have the risks of the other. And therefore, if my money was stolen, I wouldn't be able to claim from you that you should pay me half your land. And likewise, if your land gets taken, you can't claim from me that I have to give you half my money. So now, according to this, Rav Asi can't be making his statement on this because Rav Asi said, Safim Arayin Kekarka, and according to this, they're dafka not. They're each separate.
The Baal Chov can only take from dinner.
From he land, does, from the yatom. We said that the yatomim don't have to pay back loans unless it's the land is leaned. Okay? So now, right, so this is just very interesting in terms of risk, right? It's all about risk taking and what you, right, what you gain and what you lose from the risk. Okay, so now, sorry, I didn't read to the end. So, right, if he takes it from you, I'm not going to give you anything from me. So now they're going to give you the terutz. Okay, so they tried three options. Maybe it's like Rav Huna. No, that doesn't make any sense. It would be like Rav Huna. Maybe it's the Shnei Achim and it's Pshita. No, maybe it's the Shnei Achim and then it would be the opposite halacha. and that wouldn't work. So therefore, we're going to say it's like this. Ela l'shnei achim shechalku. It is about two brothers who split. Ba'ba ba'al chov v'natel chelko shel echad mehem. Okay, it means that the ba'al chov took part of one of theirs. Right, they both took land. But when the ba'al chov came, he took the land that one of the brothers had. So now when you're talking about land, right, so then we can say you can split it. But wait a minute, this doesn't make sense because Rav Asi already said this halacha. Where did we see he said this halacha? De itmar, it was said, there's a machloket amoraim, ha'achim shachaku ba'al chov v'natal chelko shel echad mehem. If the brothers split up the Yerusha and the ba'al chov comes and takes one of the properties, Rav Amar b'teila machloket. Okay, this doesn't mean machloket, this means chalukah, the splitting, right? Machloket comes from split, right? So Rav says the whole chalukah is canceled and they redivide whatever's left. Ushmuel Amar viter, the one whose land got taken, lost his property, and emal asot. Rav Asi Amar, notel revia bekarka, berevia bemod. He takes a quarter of the land. Okay, so now there's half the land left. So now what does he do? He gets a quarter of that land in karka and a quarter of that land in money. Okay, in other words, the brother has to give him half the land, a quarter in money, and a quarter in karka. So now, let's explain each shita. Rav Amar b'teila machloket, why? Kasavar, he held that ha'achim shachaku ki yorshim havu. Okay, they're like yorshim, and because they're treated like yorshim when they split up the money, so if the Yerusha, right, it's viewed as one estate, basically. So if half gets taken away, whatever's left gets split between the brothers. Shmuel Amar Viter, why does Shmuel say that brother loses? Kastavar ha'achim shechalku likuchot ukilokech shelo ba'achrayutami. Brothers that split become as if they bought the land, and it's a case where they bought the land without achrayut. That's the way brothers are viewed, you know, when they split Yerusha, and therefore it's as if he's a buyer on this land without achrayut, and therefore he gets nothing. And what about Rav Asi?
Are you assuming that the brother who took the land knew that there was a lien on it?
So it could be there was a lien on both properties. And just it happened to be that the guy took that property. You know, it was a matter of luck. Right? That's why Shmuel's opinion is difficult, because it's a little unfair. Rav Asi Amar, but again, you could say, you know, that you took this land knowing that either there was a lien on it, or, you know, but you wanted it because you wanted it for whatever reason, or you preferred this land for one reason, I preferred this land. It's tough to know exactly. It also depends how the money was split, but that's the way they view it. Rav Asi Amar, notel revia bekarka v'revia bemot, misapkale. Why? Because he's misupak. I ki yorshin dami, I ki lekucho dami. Hilkach, notel revia bekarka, revia bemot. Okay, therefore he makes a split that they do a quarter in karka and a quarter in ma'ot.
It says here or.
Yes, so the truth is now I'm looking in Rashi. Rashi says, because I was also trying to figure this out. So revia bekarka, Rashi says, yachzir lo revia chalko o karka o ma'ot. And then revia bemot o revia bemot. So in other words, he says he gets back. So then it would be, he only gets a quarter. Right. That's what I thought. And then I was struggling to read it in the words. Right. He gets, right, revia bekarka or revia bemot. In other words, what Rav Asi is saying is, karka rein, ksafim rein ke karka means, when it comes to this case and you owe what you owe, okay, we'll get to what you owe in a second, you can either pay in land or you can pay in karka. It's all viewed the same. But now what does he get? He gets only revia. Why does he get revia? Because according to Rav, he should get half. According to Shmuel, he should get none. So we split the half and the none, and we get to a quarter. So in other words, you end up that the brother whose land wasn't taken away gets three quarters, right? He gets his land, which was his to begin with, right? And then this land got taken away, okay? The one I drew in the picture. And this land is existing. So of the existing land, instead of keeping the whole thing to himself, he has to give a quarter of it to his brother, because this is the half that's under safek, whether, right? The whole half of his property is questionable. Rav says you have to give it back. Shmuel says you don't have to give it back. So we're going to split that in half. We'll get to this when we get to Bava Metzia about Cholkin, right? Yachloku, when there's Mamon and Mutal B'Safek, we split it. So that's what Rav Asi holds. Okay, and that's what he means when he says Ksafim haren kikarka. But now we say no, it doesn't make any sense he'd be saying that because he already says this somewhere else. So there would be no point to teach this since he already taught it somewhere else. So that can't be what he's saying. Okay, so therefore the Gemara goes back to the first option. It says, Ela mai haren kikarka le'inyam meitav. And then they say, Yihachi hainu Rav Huna, it's the same as Rav Huna. So they say, oh, Ema v'cheinam Rav Asi. It should say, and thus said Rav Asi. Meaning, we do link the statements, and it does mean the same thing as Rav Asi. Okay. Now, because we were talking about Rav Asi, and some people even claim that the girsa was Rav Asi Amar Rabbi Zeira, now we're going to have another statement that Rav Asi makes in the name of Rabbi Zeira, having nothing to do with this. But, okay, Amar Rabbi Zeira, sorry, I'm sorry, it wasn't Rav Asi, it's Rav Huna, sorry, it's Rabbi Zeira says in the name of Rav Huna. So some people say that the beginning of our sugya, where we said Amar Rav Huna, that it's, you know, you can be govek safim instead of karka, we said Amar Rabbi Zeira, Amar Rav Huna. Okay? So Amar Rabbi Zeira, Amar Rav Huna, the mitzvah ad shlish. Okay, when it comes to a mitzvah, you have to add ad shlish, or we don't know what this means yet. Mitzvah ad shlish. Okay, my shlish. What does this mean, shlish? And as we know shlish is a third, but what do you mean by mitzvah ad shlish? Ilem ashlish beito, if it means you have to spend up to a third of your money on a mitzvah. Well, that's not going to work, obviously. Elameata idrami leitlata mitzvata leitiv lekule beite. Right? If three mitzvot come before him, there goes all his money. Right? You can think about half lives. Right? In other words, it's always a third of whatever you have left. Yeah. But even if you go that way, you're still going to very quickly your money is going to be gone. Okay? So therefore, that doesn't make any sense to say that. Ela amar Rabbi Zeira behidur mitzvah ad shlish. When it comes to hidur mitzvah, you have to do ad shlish, okay? So what does it mean? So here there's a few different opinions about whether it means, let's say you're having you buy an etrog. So to do it mehudar, you have to buy one, you have to either spend, right, the typical understanding is you have to spend more than a third, like a third more than what it would basically cost you. In other words, you can spend up to a third more to get something better. Or some people say it has to do with the size, not the price, that you, to get a bigger something, you can spend money, whatever it costs, to get up to a third of a larger size etrog. Okay, it makes a little more sense, I think, in the money value, because it's not always, hidur mitzvah isn't always larger, right? Okay, so now the question is going to be, by Rav Ashi, shlish milgayo o shlish milavar. When you talk about a third, now this is, we've talked about the chomesh before, that a chomesh, when you have to add chomesh, it's really a quarter. Why is it called chomesh? Because once you add the quarter, that amount becomes a fifth of the whole thing, right? Let's say it's 80, and then you add a quarter more, that's 20, you get to 100, and the 20 is now a fifth out of 100. So that's what it means, milagayo milavar. Now, is it within it what it is, or from outside of it? Meaning, is it a shlish more than what it is? Let's say it's worth 40, so you have to pay, let's take an easier number, 60. So you have to pay a third more, that's 20. Or do you have to put 30 more to get it to be that your 30 more is now a third of 90? Okay? Right? Why they would do that is strange, but they do that in a lot of halachic things, right? We would never think that way. We would say, you know, we would always say a third more of what the item is, but in the Gemara, they talk about this a lot. So that's the question. How much? Obviously, it's a big difference. It's going to be a shlish milagoyo or shlish milavar. So now the Gemara answers teku. Okay, we don't know the answer. B'marava amr mishmeid Rabbi Zeira ad shlish mishalo mikam ve'elach mishalo kadosh baruch hu. Okay, this is a very strange statement. Unclear to know what this means. Okay, we'll go with Rashi. Rashi says mikam ve'elach like a Rashi mashi yosif bihidur yoter al shlish yifralo kadosh baruch hu b'chayav. Okay, even though you only have to give a shlish more, if you give more than a third and you spend more on that hidur mitzvah, God will return that money to you. Okay, that's one way of reading it. You could say there's some other ways of reading it, but we'll stick with Rashi for right now. Strange, seemingly strange statement. Okay, but Ma'arava means in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, that's what they would pass down from Eretz Yisrael in the name of Rabbi Zeira. We talked about Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira left Eretz Yisrael and went to Babel, and he like went back and forth, I believe, but he lived in Babel for a while. So, okay. Matzniti, new Mishnah. Okay, it's going to be very difficult mission to understand according to the Pshat. We're going to need the Gemara's help with this, and we won't get all of the help today. We're going to, you know, it's going to go on for a few dapim. Okay, you can look at the second side of the sheet now and look at the, I charted it out also. Kol shechavti b'shmirato, hichsharti et nizko. If I was chayav b'shmira of something, I am responsible. Hichsharti here means I'm responsible for the nezek entirely. Okay, if I something got damaged because of something I did, I'm entirely responsible. Hichsharti b'miktzat nizko. If I was responsible for some of the damage, chavti b'tashlumei nizko kehshir kol nizko. This seems to mean if I was only partially responsible, in other words, I was responsible for part of the damage but not all the damage, I still have to pay all the damage. Okay, what this case is, we're going to have to understand later. Nichasim she'em behem mi'ila, which means what? Things that are not hektesh. Remember, we talked about all this damage stuff doesn't work in the realm of hektesh, or there were, again, some debates about it. But now we're going to have criteria for when I'm chayav. It has to be nechasim that aren't hektesh, shorei ehu, right? His friend and not from God. Nechasim shehem shel b'nei brit, re'ehu means a fellow Jew, okay? Nechasim ha-miyuchadim, property that belongs to a particular person and not hefker property. So if you damage hefker property, something that doesn't belong to anybody, you're not responsible. U'bechol makom, now some nuschaot don't have this because there's a problem with saying this. Anywhere it happens, okay, chutz mi, we'll see the chutz mi in a minute, but it can't, right, not all damage is responsible everywhere. Remember, what did we say? Regel and chain isn't chayv and reshut arabim. And this seems to include, if you say b'chol makom, it clearly includes reshut arabim. So there's a bit of an issue here in some nuschaot of the Mishnah, some kitveyad, some manuscripts don't actually have the words of b'chol makom. Okay, chutz mi, reshut hamiyuchedet lemazik, okay, except for property that belongs to the mazik. In other words, if somebody trespasses in your property and they get damaged, we were talking about this after class, right? You were talking to me about a booby-trapped house. Who was talking to me about this? Someone was talking to me about, Donna was talking to me about this booby-trapped house. You know, are you like, what's the story here? So now they're telling you that it has to be not in a reshut that belongs to the mazik, to the person who caused the damage. Ooh, now hear this line. It's a question whether this goes on the next line. Okay, I think according to the Pshat, it sounds like it goes now, but apparently later on in the Gemara, they're going to discuss where this line goes. Or, whether it's connected to the previous sentence or whether it connects to the next sentence. Ooh, reshut hanizak vehamazik. Or even if, it's according to this reading, even if it was own property, we own joint property, and my shore, let's say we own a place where the ox live. So, and in that property, one attacked the other, then also I wouldn't be responsible, again, according to this reading. And then, kishehizik, now this is a very strange line, because we already know this from the first Mishnah, kishehizik, chav hamazik l'shalem tashlumei nezik b'meitav ha'aretz. And when the damages happen with all these criteria, right? So you can look, I charted now, right? With nechasim sheim b'mila, they're not hektesh. Nechasim sheim shel b'nei brit, right? They have to be Jews. Nechasim yuchadim, they have to belong to someone in particular. And it has to be either in reshut harabim or reshut hanizak, okay? And not joint property and not owned by the mazik. If this happens, then kishayizik, he has to pay from the best of his land. So obviously it's going to be a question, well, what's this line doing here? We already learned that you have to pay with the best of your land. Okay, now we're going to have a braita. And now we're going to talk about what's this case of kol shechavti b'shmirato, hichshar diyat nizko. Okay, Tana, Rabbanan, and a braita, we say, kol shechavti b'shmirato, hichshar diyat nizko. Any case, I'm chayav for shmira, I'm chayav for the damages. Ketzad. This braita now is going to elaborate, and then we're going to struggle to understand what's the braita talking about. Shur ubor shemisaran lecheresh shoteh v'katan v'hiziku chayav l'shalem ma she'en kein be'esh. That's the braita. What does it tell you? If you have a shur or a boar that belongs to you, or you dug the boar, let's say, and then you passed over possession of this property to someone, a chere shote or katan, who we presume is not a responsible human being, right? They can't be responsible. So what happens? If they damage, you're responsible because you gave it to someone who wasn't responsible and you were ultimately the one who was supposed to be responsible for this. So therefore, you're chayav. But, masha'ein came ba'esh. But this would not be the same as fire. If you pass on fire, now we're going to have to see what's the case. Yeah. That's obviously going to be the question. What kind of case of passing on fire wouldn't they be responsible for? You pass on fire to someone who's irresponsible, they can easily cause a fire. So what are you talking about? So, b'mayaskinan. Okay, now we're going to have, again, I'm going to give you the structure before we start. We're going to attempt to understand it. You can follow along in the chart. We're going to reject it. We're going to attempt a second explanation. We're going to reject it. Then we're going to go back to the first explanation, reinstate it, explain it, and then claim that there's a problem in it, and then we're going to answer up the problem. I forgot to write that in the last box there, that we're going to answer up the problem. So we're going to end up with the first answer that we have, but explain it better. If you're talking about that you passed over a tied up shore, meaning he can't damage anybody, or a bor mechuse, or a covered up bor, what would be the similar explanation, gabe esh, that would be a protected fire? It would be a gachelet, it would be a coal, a hot coal. Because a hot coal doesn't catch on fire, right? You can't, it doesn't spread. So if you want to say that, well then, why would you say Masha in Kenesh? If you're chayav, if you gave them, right, this bor kashur, and bor, shor kashur, it's like a whole rhyme thing, and a bor mechuseh, right, or an esh gachelet, maishnahacha, maishnahacha, right, they should all be the same. So therefore, it doesn't make any sense to say that that's the difference, because we need to find a case where the esh you would not be chayav for, and the shor and the bor you would be. So, Ela, it must be Bishor Mutar or Bor Megule. Right? Now, if you want to say, then it has to be the other case. If it's not that by default, what's it going to be? A loose shore and an open bore. Well, De Kavateka Be'esh shall have it. Right? It would be a flame. Right? You have a torch, let's say. So you give this torch to the Chiresh and it catches on fire. So, Masha Enkem Be'esh De Patur. How could you possibly say that you'd be patur by esh? Not only forget about what you might think logically, but Ha'amar Rish Lakish Mishmei Dechizkia. Rish Lakish himself said, Lo shanu ela shemasar lo gachelet b'liba. Aval shalhevet chayav. Rish Lakish himself says, if you give a shalhevet to someone who's not responsible and it catches on fire, you're responsible because you shouldn't have given it to someone who's not responsible. So therefore, it can't be that case. You should be chayav. So my time, huh?
So they're saying basically, if you hand the implements to make fire, then you're not chayav. But if you hand him an already...
Well, it's not implements to make fire. It's a lit. It's a no, lit
she's
coal.
Making a distinction.
Yeah.
No, but he says if you're just giving him a piece of coal and he somehow makes fire out of it, then
no, it's not if he makes fire out of it. It's already lit.
Fanned into flame.
It's,
okay, so
it's already hot. And somehow he creates a fire out of this. Right, exactly. If he fans it into flames. Okay. But it's already hot. It's not like you gave him the raw materials. You gave him something hot. But what's the difference? Basically, we're going to get into this. But the difference is that a gachelet, as time goes on, it gets
cooler.
As opposed to the flame, which keeps its strength, basically, and could just spread. So, my timer. Okay, so now, deha bare hazeka. In other words, it's clear it's going to damage, right? If you give him a shalhevet, you're obviously going to be chayav because it's clear that it can catch fire. So therefore, it can't be that option because you'll be chayav. And here it says you're patur, mashen kem be'esh, meaning you're patur be'esh. So la'olam, b'shur kashur bor mechuseh, it is a tied up shur and a bor mechuseh. U'dekavateg be'esh kachelet, and with the esh it's a kachelet, and you're chayav for the bor and the shur, but you're not chayav for the esh. Why? And the fact that you said, well, what's the difference? Why would you be chayav in the shore and the bore and not in the esh? Sure, darkei lenituke. A shore, if you tie him up, eventually he's going to set himself free. A shore is a very strong animal. Even if you tie him up, he could easily get them off. And bore, darkei lenituke. A bore also can easily, the cover can get knocked off. In other words, a cover is not sealed shut. It's a cover that can be kicked by somebody and knocked off. It's not foolproof. But gachelet, kama deshavik le ma'amya amya. But the more you leave a gachelet, it's going to get less and less dangerous, as opposed to those other things, which could only get more dangerous as time goes on. Okay, so this all works fine, except ma'amya amya va'azla. In other words, it keeps going less and less. Ulu Rabbi Yochanan de Amar afilu masar lo shalhevet nami patur de kavate hacha b'shur mutar ubor megule maishna hacha maishna hacha. Now, if you want to go along with Rabbi Yochanan, now we said Rish Lakish. What does Rish Lakish say? If you give him a shalhevet, you're chayav. But Rabbi Yochanan says, if you give a mashal hevet, you're patur. So now you'd have to ask, according to Rabbi Shimon, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that even if you give a mashal hevet, you're patur, and when it comes to the shor mutar and the bor megule, you're chayav. So now you have to ask, according to him, right? I actually wrote this wrong. It's not a koshi on this answer. It's going back to our second attempt at answering. We can attempt to answer it according to Rabbi Yochanan, but we have to explain, why does Rabbi Yochanan think that a shor and a bor that's, you know, wild and open, you'd be chayav, but a shalhevet, you'd be patur. Maishnacho maishnahacha. So what does he answer? Hatam tzavta dechiresh kagarin. Hacha lo tzavta dechiresh kagarin. In order for this fire to take effect, right, to burn something else, the chiresh actually has to do something with his hands to the fire, right? He has to kind of move it and let it go somewhere and let it drop. And he has to physically do something in order for the fire to catch from his shalhevet. And therefore, the original guy is patur, because in order for the chiresh to actually have caused a fire, he has to do something biadayim. When it comes to the shor and the boar, he just has to not watch them. It's like a shev al taseh. In other words, it's by him not actively doing something, right? It's passive. So because of that, you're chayav, because the chayresh didn't do something active to cause the damage. He just didn't do anything. And therefore, your responsibility continues. But when it comes to the shalhevet, you gave him the shalhevet, and he did something with the shalhevet. So therefore, the responsibility falls onto him. By the way, it's interesting that they gave the example of the chayresh, because we always noted that the chayresh is often viewed a little bit differently than the katan and the shoteh, because he has somewhat of a dot. And here they dafka, I don't know if it's on purpose or not, I didn't look up and see if anyone relates to it, but it's interesting that they dafka use the chayresh as an example. The question was, would it be the same if it's somebody else? And that's a good question, because really we talk about that the chayresh, right, that we had this whole thing about those two deaf guys, the famous story that they would sit and shear all the time, and then all of a sudden they could speak and they spouted words of Torah and everybody thought they were dumb and didn't know anything. So I wonder if this machlok of Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish is specifically about a chayresh and not about a shoteh and a katan. Okay, fine, we're going to stop here because this is a whole new thing. Okay, I started turning out today's stuff, but we'll use it tomorrow. We're going to start doing a comparison game. What's the chumrah of bor as opposed to shor? What's the chumrah of shor as opposed to bor? What's the chumrah of aish as opposed to shor? What about shor as opposed to aish? And we're going to have a whole comparison game. So, silly to start here.